Hello and welcome to today's Future Ready webinar. I'm Tom Murray, the Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools, a project of the Alliance for Excellent Education located in Washington, D.C. Future Ready Schools is a collaboration between the Alliance and a vast coalition of over 60 other national and regional organizations. The goal of Future Ready Schools is to maximize digital learning opportunities and help school districts move quickly towards student-centered learning. The effort provides districts with resources and support to ensure their local technology and digital learning plans align with instructional best practices, are implemented by highly trained teachers, and maximize learner-centered experiences for all students, particularly those from traditionally underserved communities. Future Ready Schools would like to thank Amazon Web Services, one of our great Future Ready partners, for sponsoring today's webinar. The hashtag for today's event is Future Ready. Thank you for making an investment and joining us today. I'm going to be your host on this webinar on enriching learning opportunities through the cloud, transforming your infrastructure to support student outcomes. With me today are two amazing leaders, Michael Coates and Dr. Travis Pocky. What an honor it is to have you both with us today. Michael, I'm going to turn it over to you first. Can you take just a moment or so to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, as you said, my name is Mike Coates. I'm the Systems Infrastructure Manager and Cloud Architect at KRESA in our Southwest MyTech IT Support Consortium. I've been a Microsoft and VMware engineer for about 15 years, both in the private sector and for the last 7 years here at KRESA. We've been working with AWS for the last 3 and change years and have migrated close to half of our infrastructure up into AWS at this point. We have a bunch of experience in AWS, but every day we continue to learn new things and still feel like we're just kind of getting started. It's been a really great ride so far, learning some of these new technologies.
Great. How about you, Travis?
Hi, I'm Travis Pocky, and I have worked at Portland Public Schools for 5 years and in education for 12. PPS is just under a 50,000 student district, and like a lot of districts, we've had our challenges with funding, particularly in IT. So that's made AWS an ideal partner for us to try and solve some of those challenges. I'm the Senior Director in the Office of Technology and Information Services, and in my spare time, I teach master's level cloud computing and information security at a couple of universities. We made our move to AWS for our ERP about 2 years ago, and I have never looked back. It's been fantastic.
Great. Well, it's awesome to have you both today. As a former tech director myself, I have the scars that many of you have. It is awesome to have and the excitement and certainly love in that world. And with that, though, it's great to have you both here, Mike from a regional end at ERISA in Michigan and overseeing many districts and supporting many districts, and then Travis from a very large district as well. So let's go ahead and dive right in. And thinking about having been that tech director myself, I know my feelings and my thoughts towards things really evolved over time. So in the past few years, really opportunities have expanded greatly for tech directors, tech departments in so many different ways. So can you both share your own stories and how your thinking about the cloud has evolved over time? So, Michael, let's start with you. How's it evolved over time for you?
Yeah, so as an ISD, we've been hosting centralized services for several years. But as technology increased so much over the last decade or so, we've seen our hosted and fully managed services grow significantly. For example, we developed an in-house HR finance payroll system called MySuite that over 40 school districts across the state use. We also host Follett Destiny Library Management for around 30 public and school libraries and on-base document management for around 25 or so schools. That's in addition to our 18 like full partner districts where we fully manage every part of their IT, from buying, deploying, and servicing desktops to hosting and managing the network and server infrastructure, phone, physical security like card access and video surveillance. Those are all huge responsibilities and services that require kind of near perfect uptime. And we really couldn't provide that in our single data center, nor did we have the funds to build redundant data centers. So we really had to turn to the cloud to help us with that redundancy and that DR business continuity requirements that some of these services really require.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. Travis, how about for you? How's your thinking evolved over time?
Well, I grew up in on-prem data centers. My first real IT job was as a computer operator in a big IBM shop. So I was definitely against cloud migrations earlier on. As a systems administrator, I kind of did the math and said, this just doesn't pencil out. I can actually get one of these servers and I can power it and host it for a lot less than the total per year cost. moved more into management, I realized that my math didn't take some assumptions into account. You know, I was assuming that I would always have a data center. I was also assuming that I would always have qualified, committed staff available to do that work. As software as a service really became robust, I started to see where some of those assumptions just really weren't true. So when you start looking at the intangibles, like, you know, transferring the burden of maintaining the data center footprint to a third party, or having incredible amounts of expertise that are up to date in the latest best practices, or elastic storage and servers that are available in minutes, not months, you know, it starts to make a ton of sense. You know, the cloud enables the kind of thing that you really can't get, or that's really expensive to enable on-prem, which is agility.
Yeah, you know, and I remember just reflecting and listening to you guys talk. I remember when I was that tech director early on, this conversation about starting and moving to the cloud. And I can remember the conversation even around security came up. And, you know, fast forward today, and somebody like you guys both use AWS, and one of our partners, you know, they host Netflix and the CIA and the FBI. And like, I think the security aspect is going to be a little bit better there than sometimes when we walk into a district that refuses to go from a security end, and, you know, the door is wide open and we go in, and there's a, I'm thinking about one district that I was in having this conversation, and, you know, anybody could access it, shouldn't be able to access it, and they were worried more about the security. And so it's interesting to see how we've all evolved over time in that. But let's really fast forward today, and I appreciate the history and the thinking and even the vulnerability and sharing your mindset shift there. But, you know, think today, you know, here we are, I'm doing a webinar from my basement, you guys are all over the place because we are working at home because of today's environment around the coronavirus, and we're watching history truly unfold before our eyes. But it's become commonplace, at least for the next few weeks or for the foreseeable future, that technology is a way that we're connecting. You know, people are using Zoom and those kinds of things to be able to connect right now. So how has the cloud supported the efforts during this time of uncertainty? You know, if you were to go back 5, 7, 10 years ago, what are we doing now? What are we able to do now that we wouldn't have been able to do if it wasn't in the cloud? What supports do we have there? Travis, do you want to start there just thinking kind of the evolution there, and what are we able to do now because of being in the cloud to support the work that we're doing?
You know, for me, it removes the uncertainty around availability. So yeah, I need my systems up. And in Oregon, supplemental education is considered an essential service. So that means I need to have all of the systems up and running. Being in the cloud means that I'm not worried about staff showing up to work, or somebody's watching the data center for a heat alarm or a UPS alarm. It's covered. My systems are up and running, and I have people that I can call if I run into trouble. I think that's something that's really huge, especially in this.
Yeah, especially in today's, for sure. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, so to me, cloud means multiple things to me. So not only does it mean the platform and infrastructure as a service offerings that places like Azure and AWS provide, it also means the software as a service type offering, things like Office 365 and G Suite. One of our goals was to get our personal U drives off of a local file server into either Google or Microsoft's cloud storage. About a third of our districts have done that so far, and the others are on their way. There's been a push over the last couple of weeks with this virus and working from home, and how do we enable our workers that aren't typically remote workers, our business office, our secretaries, you know, that are usually desktops at the office kind of people, how do we get them access to their data? So we're really trying to get those projects completed so they have access to that data from home. We've also moved forward with transitioning our shared drives into Microsoft Teams or Google Team drives. So even the shared data is accessible securely, from home, where they can collaborate and work together. And those are just things that we haven't been able to do, you know, 5, 8 years ago. We just didn't have those kind of technologies. So, as much as the platforms, like Azure, AWS, Google Cloud, are really important in changing the way we're doing things, so are the collaborative tools like O365 and G Suite.
Yeah, no, absolutely well said, especially when we start talking about the instructional side of it. And for teachers, that's the side that they know, or for educators, that's the side they know. I couldn't agree more. But let's dive into another aspect of this. If I'm a superintendent watching this, or a tech director, maybe that's been hesitant because they're thinking, all right, well, like, what's the bottom line? Like, how much is this going to cost me? We're all worried, rightfully so, about things like sustainability and making sure I can pay for things long term. So You know, I know this idea out there of a total cost of ownership, TCO. I know one of our partners, Cosin's, done a lot of work around that there as well. And economic benefits to the cloud. And you know, as schools seemingly continue to be asked to do more and more with less and less, like some districts are moving in this regard, even from a financial end. So can you discuss your thoughts there? Mike, I'll start with you on that question. Talk about total cost of ownership, if you would, and how the cloud's supporting that.
Yeah, and I think Travis kind of mentioned it a little bit in his previous answer. But one of the main things I told our leadership was when we look at TCO, we can't compare apples and wrenches, which is kind of what we've always done in the past. We had those assumptions of what our actual costs are, but when we start looking at it, it was quite a bit different. I think our on-premise data center is fine. We have a great team running it, securing it, but it's only one data center. We just can't compare that with a VM instances running on, sitting on multiple physical servers in the cloud, or having multiple availability zones ready and able to be used for essentially no additional cost. We can't compete on a per gig cost for storage for things like S3. And we can't compare infrastructures at all because the cloud allows us to have some of the automation, flexibility, and as Travis said, security. Or maybe that was you, Tom, but talking about the security that we just, I don't have, $100 million to pump into securing our stuff like Amazon, Azure, and Google, and, the other public cloud can do. So when I talked to my boss about TCO, I really let him know that the cost may not be a giant savings. And every once in a while, you might find a slightly more expensive cost for particular use cases. But when you can take into consideration all of the extras the cloud has to offer, it's really not a, it's apples to wrenches. So we've been pretty successful talking to our districts about more accurate comparisons of what you get on-prem versus in the cloud. And so far, so good on those conversations.
Great. Well said. Travis, how about you? Thoughts on that?
Yeah, kind of referencing the previous answer as well. But, total cost of ownership needs to be looked at from the highest level perspective. If you do look at what it costs you to just go out and buy a server and put it in a rack, it's just maybe even a little bit more to use a partner like Amazon. But you need to take into account those intangibles, such as not having to keep the data center up. It means not having to run your database when your systems guy goes on a two-week camping trip, which happens. It means you can set up dev and test environments that mirror production and only pay for them when you're actually doing development and test work. So that you're not running into surprises when you go to release code. It also means you get the benefits of resilience and redundancy, kind of like Mike was saying, in the multiple availability zones. And we in the education space just look at that as being out of reach and unobtainable. So we've kind of written that off of the cost of ownership equation, which means that we're probably not making that proper assessment. You're not actually buying one box to put in a rack. You're actually buying a box and it's code its counterpart somewhere else in order to have that resiliency and redundancy. So the TCO for doing that on-prem is always going to be higher. And you just have to change that mindset of what, not just what could you get, but what should you get? What do you really want to have? And that's where that equation changes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We're very well said. So let's Travis, you're in a very large district. You've got multiple staff. Mike, you're overseeing a number of districts, supporting many districts. Let's put ourselves in a situation here, if we could, where we were in a small district. Many times I'll work with superintendents and tech directors, and the tech director will say, like, I am our office, like I am the department. So let's say you're a tech director with just a very limited staff, and playing out, looking at it, maybe they're thinking, like, I don't have enough time in the day. I only have maybe a handful of people on my staff. I don't have enough time in the day to do what we do now. This idea of migrating over to something different just seems like this monstrous task that is just not feasible from even a time end. So can you talk a little bit about your migration stories and what that looked like, roadblocks that you hit, things that went well, and just be real and sharing, like, what was that process like for you? So Travis, you want to talk about that first?
Sure. So, the biggest thing to remember for that tech director in the small district is you don't have to do this all by yourself. At PPS, we identify three cloud enablement pathways. The first is if a solution that we're looking to implement has a software as a service offering, we take it. We're not going to put another thing in our data center that we don't have to. The second is we have our own AWS presence. You know, we have something that kind of looks like an extension to our own data center, which we, you know, we manage identities and we allocate instances and storage in, and so forth. And then the third, and I highly recommend this, is, you know, looking for a partner that can manage the workload that you're moving. If you have something like a PeopleSoft or a some kind of ERP, is there a vendor out there that will offer to cloud manage that for you? And what we did was we looked for moving our ERP, and we found that there were many organizations that were willing to manage as much or as little of that as we wanted to ask them for. So we asked our partner to manage the virtual networking, the virtual instances, the operating systems, databases, and the ERP software updates. So all we really had to retain in-house was the application development and configuration. Meant that the staff that I had focused on barely keeping up with those functions could be purposed to help in other areas and help drive innovation. The migration to be able to do that was handled almost completely by that partner. And we just kind of stepped in and looked at architecture and verified that that was going to work for us, and then ran a series of tests. It was probably one of the most painless migrations I've ever done in my career.
Yeah, no, well said. Mike, how about you? What's your experience been?
Yeah, so I've done a few different presentations at local tech director meetings, and we have a statewide tech director conference every year. So I've done a couple presentations on AWS migration, just kind of walking people through some of that. And really, I kind of find four big things. I'll go over them really, really quick. Number one, and probably one of the most important thing, is just to make sure to get buy-in from management. Whether that's if you're small, maybe it's just the superintendent. Maybe there's a leadership or an admin board that you need to get buy-in from. But once they understand the benefits of going to the cloud and what the vision is, that's going to make everything else so much easier. Second thing is tell people to find something easy to start with. Nobody wants a failed pilot. So do some sort of low-hanging fruit for that proof of concept project. Make sure everybody understands that the cloud isn't scary. The migration wasn't that bad. Everything will be all right. So I like little all-in-one solutions, maybe a server that also has its database coupled with it. Our early moves were a Moodle server, which is kind of an all-in-one, and our Jamf MDM. I did both of those without even telling. I told my boss, but I didn't tell any of our techs or our districts. So when we moved them, I said, all right, just out of curiosity, how's Jamf working today? Oh, it's working like a champ. Why? Like, no reason. The more transparent it is, the more successful, and the more you can go, oh, so you didn't even know, and we're taking advantage of the cloud. The third thing is create a plan for every server in your environment. So for your small districts, it's probably going to be pretty quick and easy. For your bigger ones or your ISDs, that's going to be a little bit more featured. So we exported all the VMs from our vCenter, and I labeled them things like AWS, O365, Google, and on-prem. So there's a few things that we can't do. We can't move our Cisco phones on-prem. So I just kind of label those. All right, those are going to stick on-prem for now. But everything else, I kind of labeled in that that way and figure out what is the plan for this server. And in 5 years, where is this going to be? Our file servers? Well, those are going to be in Office 365 or Google for their cloud storage. Our application servers, those are going to be in AWS. So make a plan. And then I bundled them into phases, about 10 servers or services at a time, so I knew what to focus on and in what order. And then last but not least, dedicate resources to training. Part of that, getting that buy-in, is making management understand that this is a totally new paradigm. It's going to bring a lot of change and change in skill set. So making sure training is a big part of your plan is going to be really important. I guarantee you will make mistakes along the way. I don't think it's just going to be us that's making mistakes. I think everybody's going to. And you're going to have to redo certain things. So just be ready for that and be ready to train your people. If you're a one-man shop, advocate for yourself that you really need some of these skill sets and some of these trainings, because it's going to help you significantly.
Really well said. Thank you for sharing that. So I want to remind our viewers that the hashtag for today's webinar is Future Ready. So Michael, going back to you for a moment, and when we connected, you shared about your cloud first philosophy. So So can you dive into that a little bit and what that means?
Absolutely. So once we decided that what we couldn't do what we wanted on premise, we didn't have the money for a second data center that's highly available, and that we wanted to take advantage of the cloud for those services we just absolutely needed running, we approved our leadership approved the cloud first philosophy, which essentially means that unless there's a specific business case that absolutely required a new VM to be built on premise, it was going to be built in our AWS environment. So not only did that apply to new virtual servers that we need to build, but also prioritizing some of our existing servers. So for example, about 9 months into our learning and using AWS, we started moving that My Suite financial accounting and payroll product up there. It took us probably about 2 weeks, a lot of prep work, but the actual cut over and changes was about 2 weeks of work. And we moved the entire 12 to 15 server infrastructure up there. We can't have financial services going down. If we have power outage or anything on-prem, that needs to be up. And we could also take advantage of things like load balancers that we didn't have on-premise, or the web application firewalls to start geofencing. I don't want anybody outside the United States accessing our financial system. So we can take advantage of those. And then also cloud first meant for upgrades as well. So when we had to upgrade our on-base solution, we said, all right, well, we're building the new ones in AWS and we'll migrate it there. So it's really kind of existing, migrate and new. It was all kind of built into that cloud first philosophy.
So Travis, let's go over to you if we could. So you mentioned in Portland Public Schools, you were able to leverage a point in time that really made this big cloud push possible. So what was that point in time? And talk to us about that story for you.
This needs to be a big consideration. Now, what is the right time to go? What is that inflection point? Because if you just wake up one day and you're a smaller shop and say, you know, I want to move everything that's in this room to the cloud, that's going to be a really difficult project to sell. You know, for us, we had reached a point where we needed to pretty much upgrade everything associated with our ERP. The servers were end of life. Customers were complaining, or the customers had stopped complaining about page refresh times because they had gotten so used to the slowness of the system that it was the, you know, click the record button and go get a cup of coffee and come back kind of thing. Storage was about to outgrow its SAN because we had enabled new image storage features, and we just had years and years of bad practice band-aids that needed to be addressed. So depending on how much of that work that we had outsourced and what hardware specifically we purchased, we were looking at anywhere between $300,000 and $750,000 in order to be able to address this. On top of all of that, we were being asked to cut our budget back then. So by contrasting that against a cloud move, it was pretty easy to get senior leadership support. And we went from the start of the project to production cutover in about 5 months. Kind of like Mike was saying, you know, there was some of that where some of the user base wasn't even aware that we were cutting over. They just started kind of anecdotally reporting, hey, the system seems a lot faster today. Great. That was what we were hoping for. But part of that consideration was being able to work with that partner, look at our environment and what existed there. So we did what was more referred to as a lift and shift rather than a re-engineering of platforms. We looked at what existed in our data center, moved that into the cloud, and then we've had a chance as time goes by to look at how we make that more efficient and really start improving that service for us.
Yeah, you know, and as a former tech director, I'm thinking to myself, as you're saying, bad Band-Aid over bad Band-Aid. I'm pretty sure every tech director is shaking their head saying, yep, we can relate. We've lived it at some point, but fortunately ripping those Band-Aids off and moving forward to make it better. And it's great to hear your stories in that regard. So I do want to remind our viewers one more time that the hashtag for today's webinar is Future Ready. So I'd also like to spend a little bit of time on some interesting use cases, maybe things that are happening and now feasible that may not have been thought of at the start. Can you all share some of the things you're seeing here? Mike, I'll start over there with you. Just some use cases people might be able to relate to, some real practical things. You guys have shared a lot of those kinds of things already, but what are you seeing now that may not have been anticipated when you made the move?
Yeah, so our My Suite application developers are able to work from home using Amazon Workspaces for their development environment. It's been great for them. our buildings are running out of office space, so it was great to enable them to work from home where they can concentrate a little bit better and open up some offices for the rest of the staff to slowly expand into as we grew. But also with remote learning being in the forefront right now, we're really looking at spending some time testing Amazon's AppStream product and how we might be able to utilize that for students. We haven't started that R&D work yet, but it's kind of toward the top of our list. Since many of our staff are working, albeit from home, the one technology that we're really moving the fastest on is Microsoft Teams. That tool is fantastic if you've never seen it or used it. We're creating teams for each of our departments, moving their departmental shared files into the OneDrive that's associated with it, and kind of getting them going with that sync client for file streaming. We're training them on some of the other features like OneNote and Planner for that lightweight project management. Most of our Google centric districts are using Google Team Drives, and we're rolling that out as well. But even a few of our Google districts are starting to utilize Microsoft Teams in this way. Where their personal folders are in their Google Drive, but that shared data is in Teams because it's so dynamic. So that's been the one technology that we've been really rolling out the last few weeks to enable that remote working that we just never had those features and capabilities in the past. That cloud services, software as a service options that are just out there that are pretty amazing.
Travis, how about you? Any surprises, things that you're now doing that you never saw coming when you started rolling things over?
Actually, we're looking at workspaces and app streams. We've actually done a lot of the R&D around that. And right now, before the virus came, we were just getting ready to start pilot cases in some of our labs. So, for us, the use case isn't in cost reduction again, but it's enabling the student to have access to some of the specialized hardware and software in our career and technical education labs. One of the major problems that we have, and one of the big equity issues that we have, is that if a project takes extra time, if it takes time that would run in excess of that class period, today the student only has access to be able to do that either before school or after school. That's a really big challenge for us. And what we wanted to start presenting to those students is the ability to access that software 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we're just at the point of those pilots now, and we had actually identified pilot groups, and we hope to get back to that as soon as possible, and we may end up proceeding through that as this crisis kind of continues.
Yeah, it's interesting. Oops, I'm sorry, didn't mean to cut you off, my friend. Keep going.
No, that's all right. The other thing that we're doing is we're looking at piloting Amazon Connect for cloud contact centers. In the near future, that's going to give us the ability to create call centers powered by Lex, and that'll support a lot of these pop-up services that become necessary during crises. And it really allows us to democratize the control of those. So rather than having central IT manage a call tree and the script that's going out with that, somebody can just enter their own text file and be able to manage that themselves as that crisis evolves or as those services pop up and go back down again.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see, and no surprise, how the coronavirus has really even accelerated our thinking on so many of these things just in the past few weeks. And so I'm certainly going to be excited to hear how that goes for you as we continue to move forward in those. But let me wrap up with one question here. Every Future Ready webinar really has people from all different demographics that are watching. They're also at all different starting points, whether it be going to the cloud or now remote teaching or those kinds of things. Some districts are really well on their way to sustainable, innovative change. They could have been partners in our webinar like you both today, and others are just getting started and putting that first step in. So in either case, what advice do you have for those, regardless of where they are on the continuum? So Travis, I'll start with you on last one because I started with Michael on the last one. So Travis, I'll let you, what advice do you have for those that are watching, regardless of where they may be in any sort of implementation like this?
So the first piece of advice I would put out there is, invest the time to identify your workloads. Once you know what you have, you might find that there are one or two that just make sense to move to the cloud as soon as possible. It's also a great exercise for identifying which ones did not make sense and why. Is there a future state that would make sense, and what does it take to get there? Do you need to use up the residual value in the servers that you just bought for it? before it really makes sense to move that. The second piece of advice I would give is that you cannot approach this from a simple TCO point of view. The cloud gives you access to things that you may have just otherwise written off. Things like disaster recovery, scalability, elasticity, resiliency, just that ability to move and meet customer demand much faster. It may also be a way to change staff positions from being direct specialized support of legacy systems into analysts that can leverage long-term organizational knowledge and business process knowledge for your org to be able to help innovate and drive other processes forward. And lastly, I would say, you know, work with your computer science teachers to help build this into their curriculum. Cloud computing is an accepted part of business, and we need to help students understand that computing isn't what happens in that box that's sitting on your desk. You know, that box is just the beginning of what you can access.
Yeah, so well said. How about Mike? Over to you. What advice do you have?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I would say is just get started. It's a path, and you can't get to the end until you get started. Enable your people to learn these skills. It is a new paradigm, so there's going to be a lot of change. Just like when we went from physical into that VMware virtual world, it was an entirely new skill set to master, both in the functional level, but also in the security. You know, the security in the cloud is also incredibly important. It can be incredibly complicated. So make sure that you understand that and enable those workers to really learn this new skill set. And then kind of the last big thing that I would say is think outside the box for things that were always a pain and you always took for granted that it would always remain to be a pain. And look for ways to solve those pain points that you just it was just nagging, it was always going to be there. So you know, for us, one of the things that was difficult for us was as we were upgrading our applications, we would just YOLO and give it a try, right? In prod, and we would, you know, take a snapshot. So if something happened, we could roll back. But we did it in prod. So what we've done now is we've got a cloud formation template where we can spin up a test dev VPC that mirrors our existing AWS infrastructure. We can restore last night's backup of the VM into it. So we're essentially testing the application process on a clone of prod, but without actually breaking prod or taking it down. Not only does it help us kind of guarantee that process is going to work on prod, but when it doesn't go well and we need to get a vendor involved, they can work in this other environment that we can break and research and try different things on without affecting production uptime. And the other thing that was little, but it's kind of a pain, was keeping our VM images updated. You know, on premise, we get up, you know, we launch our instance, we'd manually run the update, we'd do all these things to it, and then that would be our image. But we'd have to do that every single month after Patch Tuesday. And, you know, using AWS tools, we can just automate that where, you know, the second Tuesday or the second Saturday of every month and the third Saturday of every month, it automatically launches our AMI, runs all the Windows updates, runs all the driver and agent updates for AWS, you know, powers it down, takes a new image of it, and we don't have to touch it anymore. Just we always will running the next VM we build will always have the latest updates. And those were just little things that were kind of annoying that we don't have to worry about anymore. So I think just kind of thinking outside of the box is going to be the big, because it opens up just an untold number of ways to fix things that you didn't even know were broken. Or band-aided together. So just think outside the box.
Wow. Thank you so much for that, Mike and Travis. I can't thank you enough for your insights today, for your incredible future-ready mindsets, for the work you're doing for kids. You know, I do want to remind our viewers that information on the Future Ready effort can be found at futureready.org. We encourage and challenge district superintendents to join over 3,400 others and sign our Future Ready pledge. We also just released this year's Fall Institutes, and you can check those out at futureready.org/institutes. I also want to encourage our viewers to get involved with our growing strands, from district leaders to tech leaders, principals, librarians, and instructional coaches. We have vastly expanded the reach of Future Ready Schools over the past few years. Check out our private Facebook groups and ongoing activities to stay connected with those working alongside of you throughout the nation. I do want to thank again today, Mike and Travis. Thank you so much for joining us today, as well as our viewers for joining us for this Future Ready webinar. As a special thanks for our Future Ready partner, Amazon Web Services, for making today's webinar possible. Don't forget to connect with us here at Future Ready on Twitter at Future Ready and on Facebook at facebook.com/Future Ready Schools. If you've missed anything from today's conversation, it's going to be archived at futureready.org soon after this webinar. You can also find all of our webinars on our Future Ready YouTube channel as well. Thank you again for joining us here at Future Ready. Have a fabulous day, and we'll see you next time.